WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. When our language commentator Jeffrey Nunberg watches movies, he hears how Hollywood uses dialects and what dialects are supposed to say about social class and status.
Few plays have survived the transition to the screen as well as George Bernard Shaw's Pygmalion did in the 1938 version starring Leslie Howard and Wendy Hiller. Maybe it's because the play is basically about the problematic relation between appearances and reality. When Higgins undertakes to change Eliza's speech, he intends to make her only a counterfeit lady.
This is almost irresistible. She's so deliciously low. So horribly dirty.
Dirty. I washed my face and hands before I come out, did.
I shall make a duchess of this draggle-tailed gutter snipe.
Oh!
In 6 months, in three, if she has a good ear and a quick tongue, I'll take her anywhere and pass her off as anything.
But by the end of the movie, Eliza really has been transfigured, and Higgins himself must acknowledge the fact.
When I think of myself crawling under your feet and being trampled on and talked down, when all the time I don't need to lift my finger to be as good as you are, oh, I could just kick myself.
By George, Eliza, I said I'd make a woman of you, and I have.
It's a compelling theme for the movies, which have always trafficked in illusions. So it's no wonder that the movies have retold the Pygmalion story a number of times. I'm not thinking so much of the 1964 film My Fair Lady, which aside from its score was a stiff costume piece with none of the passion of the Leslie Howard version. But the story has been given some interesting twists in other movies that range from Bride of Frankenstein to Radio Days. One charming version of the story that's available on videocassette is Howard Hawks 1942 film Ball of Fire, a strange crossing of Pygmalion and Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Gary Cooper is cast against type as Professor Potts, a stuffy grammarian living with six old scholars in a house near Columbia University.
It's a crime to carelessly expose this good carpet.
You've just committed a more serious crime, Miss Bragg. You have split an infinitive.
In the course of writing an article on slang, Cooper runs into Barbara Stanwyck, who plays a nightclub singer named Sugarpuss O'Shea, and he tries to interest her in his project.
See, I'm conducting an investigation on current slang. Would you object if I used you for observation and study?
Yeah, I would.
Well, if I could have your assistance for just a few days, it would be...
Out, Professor.
Then you won't help me?
No, out. Shove in your clutch.
Shove in your clutch. Exactly the kind of thing I want. Perhaps if I could come back here again when you have more time.
Save the guess. I won't be here after tonight.
Well, look, here's the address of the foundation. If you should happen to change your mind by any chance, it's my residence as well.
Listen, not now.
Well, I'll just leave it here.
Okay, Scrouse, Graham, Scraw.
The complete conjugation. All right, I'll scraw.
But when the DA's office comes looking for Stanwyck to make her testify against her gangster boyfriend Dana Andrews, Stanwyck takes Cooper up on his offer. She moves into the house, and Cooper proceeds with his investigations.
There's another word I'd like to take up now. It's recurred several times in our discussions, and its meaning still eludes me. I think it was Miss O'Shea who used it yesterday in reference to the cuffs that I wear. The word is corny.
Yeah, wouldn't you say they were corny?
Because of the cornstarch in them?
Because it's 1941.
Cooper falls for Stanwyck, and when he learns that she's just been using him to hide out from the law, the two have a confrontation very like Higgins and Eliza's. But in this case, it's not the flower girl whose language is transformed, but the professor's.
You've given us all a fine course in the theory and practice of being a sucker. It was a very small tuition fee. Perhaps it wasn't quite worthy of you choosing us as subjects of your demonstration. Eight pushovers, like shooting fish in a barrel.
I didn't want you to get it this way. Not right in the face.
Of course, it all ends happily with Cooper beating up Dana Andrews and carrying Stanwyck away. It's a perfect American reversal of Shaw's story. If learning proper English makes Eliza into a lady, learning slang makes Professor Potts into a man. But the casting gives the movie another significance. You can see it as Hawke's parable of the history of talking pictures in the 30s, the period when they abandoned mannered theatricality for the more naturalistic voices of actors like Cooper, Cagney, and Edward G. Robinson. It's not surprising that the Pygmalion story should pop up again in the ultimate movie about movies, Stanley Donen's 1952 Singing in the Rain. Gene Kelly and Gene Hagen play silent film stars who must make the transition to talkies. Hagen has a shrill, obnoxious voice that no number of diction lessons can alter.
Now, ta-tay-tee-to-too. No, no, Miss Lamont. Round tones, round tones. Now let me hear you read your line.
And I can't stand him.
And I can't stand him.
And I can't stand him.
Can't.
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 The solution is found in a kind of Henry Higgins ex machina. Debbie Reynolds will dub Higgins' voice for her.
All set in there?
Right.
Nothing can keep us apart. Our love will last till the stars turn cold.
All right, Kathy, go ahead.
Nothing can keep us apart. Our love will last till the stars turn cold.
That's great. Perfect. Cut.
The picture's a success, but Hagen is undone when she's asked to sing a song at the premiere. Kelly opens the curtain, and the audience sees that it's really Reynolds who is singing while Hagen mouths the words. Hagen is humiliated, and Reynolds becomes a star. On the face of things, the lesson is that artifice will be revealed, that Eliza will be unmasked at the ball when she trips on her H's. But the great in-joke of Singing in the Rain was that it was really Hagen who dubbed Reynolds singing in the movie and not the other way around. Hagen was the Duchess, and Reynolds was the flower girl, and we were all taken in. I can't imagine Shaw having written Singing in the Rain, but I think he would have taken an enormous pleasure in having produced it.
Jeffrey Nunberg is a linguist associated with the Institute for Research on Learning in Palo Alto, California. From the soundtrack of Singing in the Rain, here's Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor.
Moses supposes his toes are roses, but Moses supposes erroneously.
But Moses, he noses, his toes aren't roses, as Moses supposes his toes to be.
Moses supposes his toes are roses, but Moses supposes erroneously.
A mose is a mose.
A rose is a rose.
A toes is a toes. Hoopty doody doodle, Moses.
This is Fresh Air.